UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.
Hi everyone and welcome back to A Taller Mountain, a podcast about inspiring women in English literature. This is episode 9. I'm Natalia Hernandez, a teacher of English at the Official School of Languages in Elche. And this podcast has been born of the collaboration between the school and the UMH, Universidad Miguel Hernández. You're not all alone, instead of feeling low. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode. Our podcast can be found on iVoox, please subscribe, and also on the websites of the Official School of Languages and, of course, UMH Radio. What you're dreaming of, instead of trying to win. With us today, we have Sara. Sara is an ex-student of the School of Languages. She completed her degree in English Studies not long ago. She's not getting information to become a teacher, and most importantly, she's a poetry lover and a big fan of English literature. Thanks a lot for coming, Sara.
Thanks to you, Natalia. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today.
And she is here today because it's a special episode. We're going to commemorate the World Poetry Day, which is celebrated every year on the 21st of March. Let me tell you that UNESCO first adopted this day as World Poetry Day in Paris in 1999. With the aim of supporting linguistic diversity through poetic expression and promoting the visibility of those languages that are in danger. This day honors one of the most cherished forms of human expression and linguistic identity. Poetry, practiced throughout history in all cultures and on all continents, speaks of our common humanity and shared values, transforming the simplest poem into a powerful catalyst for dialogue and peace. Let's celebrate poetry. Let's enjoy poetry, the literary form that I believe must have been the first one in history, the deepest and the most human. A genre that, like music, connects us with that which makes us one. Now I want to read you a quote by Joy Harjo, a poet from the USA, a woman, which goes like this. When I began to listen to poetry, it's when I began to listen to the stones, and I began to listen to what the clouds had to say, and I began to listen to others, and I think, most importantly for all of us, then you begin to learn to listen to the soul, the soul of yourself in here, which is also the soul of everyone else. It's a lovely quote, isn't it? Okay, and we shouldn't forget the World Theatre Day either, which was celebrated on the last 27th of March. However, we'll have to deal with this in a future episode. Now let's get started. Our ninth episode is devoted to an incomparable poet, Emily Dickinson. It's time for our first section, A Woman's Life. Emily Dickinson was born in 1830 in Massachusetts, the USA. An excellent student, Dickinson was educated at Amherst Academy for 7 years and then attended Mount Holyoke Female Seminary for a year. She began writing when she was just a teenager, and her early influences include Leonard Humphrey, principal of Amherst Academy, and a family friend named Benjamin Franklin Newton, who sent Dickinson a book of poetry by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Among her peers, Dickinson's closest friend and advisor was a woman named Susan Gilbert, who, according to some scholars, may have been a romantic interest of Dickinson's as well. The Dickinson family lived on a large home known as the Homestead in Amherst. In 1856, Gilbert married Dickinson's brother, William. And after the marriage, William and Susan settled in a property next to the homestead known as the Evergreens. Emily and her sister Lavinia served as the main caregivers for the ill mother until she passed away in 1882. Neither Emily nor her sister ever married, and they lived together at the homestead until their respective deaths. In her spare time, Dickinson studied botany and produced a vast herbarium. She also maintained correspondence with a variety of contacts. One of her friendships, with Judge Otis Phillips Lord, seems to have developed into a romance. Dickinson's seclusion during her later years has been the object of much speculation. Scholars have suggested that she suffered from conditions such as agoraphobia or depression, and it appears that she was also treated for a painful problem in her eyes. After the mid-1860s, she rarely left the confines of the homestead. It was also around this time that Dickinson was most productive as a poet, creating small bundles of verse known as fascicles, without any awareness on the part of her family members. While Dickinson was extremely prolific and regularly enclosed poems in letters to friends, she was not publicly recognized during her lifetime. The first volume of her work was published posthumously in 1890 and the last in 1955. She died in 1886 when she was 56 years old. As an anecdote, let me tell you about how Emily Dickinson and Taylor Swift are related. Yes, you heard me right. Taylor Swift happens to be a distant cousin of Dickinson's. In fact, this popular singer described a category of her lyrics and songwriting, affectionately titled Quill Pen Songs, that are in part inspired by Dickinson. She once stated, and I quote, "If my lyrics sound like a letter written by Emily Dickinson's great-grandmother while sewing a lace curtain, that's me writing in the quill genre. I will give you an example from one of my songs. Ivy, I'd categorize as quill." End of quote. The aforementioned song, Ivy, was used in an episode of the Apple TV Plus series, Dickinson. So, Sarah, I'm so glad you're here with us to talk about this wonderful writer. A writer, by the way, whose life has been under close scrutiny because it was rather peculiar at that time. Mm-hmm. Why is it a good general knowledge of Emily Dickinson's life useful for interpreting her poems?
Well, a general knowledge of Emily Dickinson's life helps interpret her poetry because her personal experiences shaped her themes and style. Her reclusive lifestyle influenced her focus on solitude and introspection, while her complex views on religion appear in her spiritual questioning. Let me now tell you about her relationship with another woman, Susan Gilbert, mm-hmm. and this shaped the tone and themes of Dickinson's work.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in a moment too.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Her fascination with death, shaped by personal loss and the Civil War, is a key theme in her work. Besides, Dickinson's love for nature and science informed her precise imagery, and her unconventional writing style reflects her independent thinking. Understanding her background provides deeper insights into the meaning behind her poems.
Yes. Well, Dickinson exhibited an independence of mind that broke out of the boxes of cultural constraints. Mm-hmm. You know, she developed a strong sense of identity as a woman, as a poet. Could you comment on this, please?
Of course. Unlike most women of her era, Dickinson never married and chose a life of intellectual and artistic solitude. She prioritized her poetry over social conventions, embracing a lifestyle that allowed her to explore her inner world freely. Her use of dashes, unconventional capitalization, and slant rhyme challenged literary norms. She refused to adhere to traditional poetic forms, making her work highly distinctive.
That's amazing for her time. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
Emily Dickinson's independence of mind allowed her to break societal norms, shaping her unique identity as a woman and poet. She rejected traditional roles by choosing solitude over marriage and prioritized her poetry. Her unconventional style, questioning of religious beliefs, and deep emotional themes set her apart. Though largely unpublished in her lifetime, her work defied literary norms and left a lasting impact, redefining the role of women in literature.
Right, so she was a rule breaker. Mm-hmm. I love that. Why don't we talk about the role of nature in her poems now? What do you know about that?
Sure. Nature in Emily Dickinson's poetry serves as a powerful lens for exploring themes like spirituality, life, death, and human emotion. She often portrays nature as mystical, symbolic of the life cycle, and deeply personal. Through personification, keen observation, and vivid imagery, Dickinson presents nature as both a source of beauty and mystery. Her work reflects a blend of scientific curiosity and spiritual reflection, using elements like birds, seasons, and light to convey profound philosophical ideas.
You know, being from Asturias, I always feel moved by everything that is connected to nature, you know.
Yeah, I understand that feeling too. Well, Emily often gives human traits to elements of nature, making them active participants in her poetry. Birds, bees, and even the wind take on human-like qualities. As seen in the poem, A Bird Came Down the Walk, where the bird's simple actions reflect deeper human emotions.
You know, Sarah, I believe that one of the most delightful things about poetry is listening to it. Mm-hmm. And here's a little secret joy of mine. I love being read to. So naturally, my next question is, could you please read us a couple of lines from that poem?
Of course, Natalia. A bird came down the walk. He did not know I saw. He bit an angleworm in halves and ate the fellow raw.
That sounded really lovely. Thank you, Sarah. Now, turning to another issue, the topic of death, which you mentioned before, mm-hmm. is central in her poems too. There's nothing more natural than death, is there?
Yeah, death is a common topic in Emily's poems. She demonstrates in her works that she is concerned about the passage of time and how fast life ends. This is due to the fact that death was constantly present at that time when people died simply because of an injury or illness.
Of course.
According to Omana Anthony, professor and head of the Department of English in Lingayas University, Emily wrote 500 poems about death.
That definitely is a lot.
Mm-hmm. It is. Death is such a key concept for Dickinson that she even personifies it. That is to say, death is presented as a person, just as you and me, for example. In the series Dickinson on Apple TV Plus, the death character is represented by a serious man. He appears in a carriage and is constantly smoking.
Well, no wonder he's dead then.
Yeah, you bet. Viewers can notice how Emily and death become friends. This illustrates Emily's relationship with this topic.
I suppose understanding nature and accepting it like it is makes you understand and accept death better, the end of life. Anyways, well, what about love? Is it present in her poetry?
It is. In some of her poems, love for humankind serves as a means to grasp omnipresence and has been transmuted into love of God. That is, she seems to be using human love as a step to divine love. For instance, in her poem 664, "Of all the souls that stand create, vision of divine love reveals to the poet that the earthly love is nothing compared to spiritual love." Also, in the poem "Because That You Are Going," she expresses her faith in immortality because of the hope that her love will be seen in the other world. Let me read you part of this poem.
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay, here I go. "Because that you are going and never coming back, and I, however absolute, may overlook your track. Because that death is final, however first it be, this instant be suspended above mortality."
That was so beautiful, Sana.
Thank you.
Listen, Emily Dickinson expressed so well the inexpressible.
Mm-hmm.
What metaphysical elements are present in her poetry?
Yeah, she did that in order to represent those concepts that are out of this world, we could say. To do so, Dickinson uses imagery to describe supernatural elements like ghosts and death. In "Because I Couldn't Stop for Death," Dickinson describes death as a gentleman who is dressed up in gossamer, a thin and translucent cloth.
Oftentimes, Dickinson's poems burst with images and metaphors which create psychological landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
She blends symbolism and allegory. How does she do that? And what does that make us, the readers, feel?
Well, her poems are extremely visual due to the images she uses, even for those elements which are difficult or even impossible to describe. For example, the illustration and comparison of hope with a bird.
There's nature again.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Emily's works are usually hard to interpret, so it makes questions arise in readers' minds. On the contrary, there are some poems that are not that complex, since they remind readers of their own experiences in modern times.
She also distinguished herself as a writer of letters, which she regarded as a joy of earth. They've been edited too. What do you know about these letters?
Well, I know there's a book called Open Me Carefully, which collects Emily's intimate letters to Susan Huntington Dickinson.
Oh, yes. You mentioned her before.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Sue was Emily's lover, or close friend, as historians would say. And at the same time, Sue was married to Emily's brother, William Austin Dickinson.
Okay, so she was Dickinson's sister-in-law.
That's right. Well, there is one part of a letter in which Emily writes, and I quote, "Will you let me come, dear Susie, looking just as I do? Oh, Susie, time will fail me to enumerate my appearance. Yet I love you just as dearly as if I was here so fine. So you won't care, will you?"
Wow. Do you think, Sara, something like that could be written on a WhatsApp or a message on Instagram nowadays? Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that would be something like, Susie, heart emoji.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We should go back to writing letters. I think that way we'd make a bigger effort to win someone's heart and our spelling would improve too.
Totally.
Well, I guess you've got a favorite poem by Emily Dickinson. Which one is it? And could you read us a few verses, please?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My favorite poem is "Because I Couldn't Stop for Death."
Okay. We're listening.
"Because I couldn't stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. We passed the school where children strove, a recess in the rain. We passed the fields of gazing grain. We passed the setting sun."
It's amazing. Why is it your favorite poem?
Because I couldn't stop thinking about the first two lines. They got stuck in my mind. Also because of the way she symbolizes the cycle of life, like childhood, maturity, and old age. Also, because she brings death back to life by personifying and letting him participate in the actions that take place in the poem. And because of how Emily symbolizes the process of dying by being taken by death in his carriage to your final destination. It's like a journey to the grave.
Well, now this interview is getting to its final destination, Sarah. Mm-hmm. So I need to ask you the two questions I ask all my guests at the end of every episode. Here goes the first one. Do you have a favorite quote by Emily Dickinson?
Yes, I do. My favorite quote by her is, "I am so glad, dear Susie, that our hearts are always clean and always neat and lovely, so not to be ashamed." I love this quote because it gives an important and powerful message to queer people. What I understand is that even though people judge queerness, we have to remind ourselves that our hearts are clean, as Emily says, and we don't have to feel ashamed of who we are. I am amazed at the way Emily wrote things like this at a time when it was impossible to think about these types of relationships. Personally, it is because of these things that we have had the courage to continue fighting for until these days.
Okay. And it's time now for the last question. Are you ready?
Sure.
So do you recommend reading her work to students of English or to everyone?
Well, Emily's work is a must for people who enjoy literature. What's more, I would recommend her poems and letters to people who have studied English because if somebody doesn't know this language and reads a translation of her work, it's not the same, I think.
It's not. Thank you so much, Sarah. Did you like the experience?
I loved it, Natalia.
So would you like to come back some other time?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Oh, look, this is being recorded, right? Sarah, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me here as a guest.
Okay, you'll be back. And let's get ready for our next section on screen. You've got a great chance to listen to her poems read aloud to you on YouTube. Try the link I leave on iVox and on the school's social media. You can't miss the Emily Dickinson Museum's website, where you can visit the online collections catalogue. Subscribe to its newsletter and learn much more about this wonderful poet. Let's talk now about films and series. Terence Davies directed and wrote A Quiet Passion, a 2016 biographical film about her life. The film stars Cynthia Nixon as the reclusive poet. The film premiered at the 66th Berlin International Film Festival in February 2016 and was released in the United Kingdom on April 7, 2017. You can watch it on Filmin. Wild Nights with Emily, a 2018 American romantic comedy, written and directed by Madeleine Olneck, is based on actual events from Dickinson's life. It can be watched on Filmin and Amazon Prime. Dickinson, a series we've mentioned during this episode, premiered in 2019 on Apple TV Plus. The series focused on Dickinson's life. If you need to practice your listening skills, there's a fantastic listening exercise about her, which includes poems, on radioenglish.com. We can't forget that Dickinson's work has served as inspiration to numerous music composers, including Aaron Copland, Samuel Barber, Chester Biscardi, Elliot Carter, Libby Larson, and Judith Weir, among others. I'll leave you the link to one of Judith Weir's pieces, Moon and Star. And if I were you, I wouldn't miss Emily Dickinson's Spotify playlists, where you can listen to a wide range of contemporary choral, orchestral, classical and operatic music inspired by Emily Dickinson's life and verse. And now, before we go, I'd love you, Sarah, to read Legacy to our listeners, the poem by Rupi Kaur, which inspired the name of this podcast. Will you do that for us, please?
Yes, of course.
Thanks.
I stand on the sacrifices of a million women before me, thinking, what can I do to make this mountain taller so the women after me can see further?
Oh, thanks. Everybody, let's read poetry. Let's listen to poetry. An experience which allows us to connect to others, to nature, and to ourselves in a primeval way. Sarah, you've provided us with this experience today, and you've made this mountain taller with us doing this podcast. Our listeners too. You, all of us together, we are making this mountain taller.
Mm-hmm. Let me now mention Malu.
Oh, yes, Malu.
One of your guests.
Yes, wherever you are, Malu, thank you, because you helped us preparing this podcast, this episode. Yeah. We know Emily Dickinson's really close to your heart, and you've been helping us, but unfortunately, you haven't been able to be here today with us, but we've been remembering you all the time.
That's right. Thank you, Malu.
And it's time to say goodbye. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you tune in next month for episode 10, our last episode this season.
Be glad you got somewhere to go instead of feeling sad.
Don't forget that you can find the link to this podcast, as well as those links I mentioned, in the section on screen, posted on the Instagram page of the Official School of Languages, as well as in the description of our episode on iBooks. Please subscribe to Atoll a Mountain.
Feel good about what you're dreaming of.
Of course, it will also be available on the school's website and on UMH Radio online. A huge thank you to you, Sarah, for joining us, and to the entire staff of UMH Radio. In the technical team today, Antonio Peñalver. Bye.
Instead of feeling broke, buck up.
UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.